going on, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the man sitting next to me, the abominable snowman himself, Mr. Cold as Ice, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. I just had to cross the frozen tundra to get over here to the studio. But yeah, man, I'm
here. It's a little icy, huh?
It is. I got hit with another wave of ice. And, you know, they shut down the schools and everything like that. So the kids love it. But yeah. So no, just chilling at my casa before coming over here.
And here's the worst part of it. Right before it got in, you hear me wheezing. You'll hear Kyle wheeze. The wind's blowing. Everything's blowing. My wife's allergies, my allergies. Kyle stopped. I don't know. I guess it stirs everything up.
Yeah, right? I guess the pollen or whatever.
Oh, God. Yeah. And then it comes in and ices over. And now you can't leave. So we're just, yeah. So we thought, what better time than to pull this off and us get together and just tell some crazy stories.
Yeah.
So normally, I guess we need to tell them we're going down this way because Kyle has a recording place of his own that he records at lots of times. And he can't get to it. It's iced in. He cannot drive to where he's got it. He got it at his office. He keeps it all built up there. He can't get into town, right? So he walks over here. We're like, we're going to do a fun one. We're going to share again like the OTC stuff. Might tell some crazy stories that happened to us. Might talk about crazy cryptids.
I got a crazy one for you.
We got some wild stories to share with y'all. It's just going to be a good flow. No really rhyme or reason today because of this weather. And then, like we said, we'll see how this goes.
With the cold weather, I'm actually kind of missing the Winter Olympics now. I got into watching the skeleton and the luge.
Me too.
Like, what I like about it is the unusual events that you don't get to see all the time. Like I said, I'm sure I can go on YouTube or some other website, ESPN Plus.
Say it. Which one do you want to go do the most?
Of all of them?
I'm not talking the physical. I'm talking about the games that you can play there. You want to be my curling partner?
Oh, yeah. I love curling.
I want to do curling so bad.
You know, I almost did it about 10 years ago.
Here we go.
I almost got into it.
You know, I was a curling champion.
No, I never done it. But I've seen guys do it. On Sundays at the rink, they would have curling.
Would you all sit around and kind of watch it?
Oh, yeah. Because there's people that, because the hockey rinks, well, there's a couple of them in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, mm-hmm. but several of them are called the Dr. Pepper Stars Centers after the team. And every one of them has multiple rinks, and there's a bar above. So you can literally sit there at the bar and look down and watch two hockey games, watch some curling.
You drinking Crown and Coke and watching curling?
You can. So there's league nights.
When you say you, that means you.
Yeah, me. Yes, I've done that.
Me.
Yeah.
That's you.
It's shuffleboard, but you're standing on it. Right?
Yeah.
And all the stones, they all come from one place in Scotland. Why, I don't know. That they all come from the same quarry. I mean, they were getting into the details because I think there's only like 100 people in the whole world that actually play it.
I love it. I legitimately did. Like that's how old man I am. It's frozen shuffleboard.
Frozen bocce ball.
That I love.
There's
you know what else I love? What? That Ned Flanders you got going on, bro.
You like that?
I wish you would keep that year round and just really rock it.
Okay. I'll let it go.
Just get the big Sam Elliott like push broom. But I always try to get you to get the Magnum PI and you'll never go for it. You'll get the PI part, but you never go Magnum.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not Magnum. That's
no, trust
much.
Me, you're not. We've bought condoms. I know.
But some of the events, like the luge or like skeleton, that's where you're like head first. Like, I don't understand how you practice that.
Who do you think invented that?
Man, it has to be some crazy German.
I was going
to
say Australians or New Zealanders, and here's why.
Australia, because that's not cold enough.
Yeah, but I always think about the spider repelling that they do, where they'll go down like head first repelling.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's got to be invented by Australian or New Zealanders. It has to be.
Who knows?
It's just, or I think, would you do skeleton? Would you rather go head first or foot first?
Foot.
Yeah.
Skeleton's too much for me.
No, I think that might be the way to do it because you could read the thing. I think I could read better looking forward. And also, I couldn't see over my stomach. I'd lay down.
I don't even
I'd
understand.
I'd be trying to do it. I'm fat. I'm going left. It's not going to work for me.
I don't understand
like
how they even steer it. I mean, I see the things that they press their legs on, but
it's because you're clenching your ass so tight from fear that your legs are like you tense up, and that's what steers the
I like the other event, too, where they ski for a while, then they stop and they shoot. Then they go skiing some more.
Yeah.
Then
can
they
you
shoot
imagine?
Prone.
Yeah. The biathlon.
I don't remember what it's called, but yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's what it is. Very, very cool.
And they use 22s, and then they have them. Have you seen the spare rounds they get?
No.
So they stick in a little clip at the top. So if you miss, you can reach up top and you have three, but you every three is like it's like a penalty lap.
Yeah, they give you points.
So you got to hit one, but then you got to go and like ski another circle off the main track, the penalty loop before you can come back on.
Seeing if it was
their cardio is ridiculous.
If it was on all the time, I don't think I would enjoy it. It's the fact that it's only on every 4 years.
I have a problem with that too.
But the time duration between the two of the two events? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. My problem is I think I wish that they would show and sponsor more of this worldwide stuff like that. Like I wish there was a way. Because a lot of these athletes, this is like they're athletes, but they have full-time jobs, full-time everything, because they're not full professional gigs in any country.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, you know, to be able to, you know, the countries that it's in is very small countries, right?
I don't understand how a country gets banned because of doping, and then they just still compete, but they just create like a new banner.
Oh, that's what we're going to do.
Like the Russian Olympic Committee?
Yeah.
That's the Russia's banned, but they just, all the athletes just change.
But they promise to do good.
Yeah. And I think one of them already got busted.
Yeah, but that's like you. That'd be like you getting, you're speeding, but now you're not Kyle Filson, you're Mr. Filson, and I promise to drive a little better.
Yeah, something like
Mr. Filson's a liar.
No, what are you talking about?
Right. Yeah. So other than that, we've all been doing good, laughing, watching all this. We miss this. We have a few crazy stories. I can't even say crazy, just basically unnerving and entertaining stories that we're going to share.
Yeah, this one comes from a listener of ours. It says, hey, y'all. Somewhat new listener, about 2 months, and I wanted to share this story with y'all.
Well, welcome, welcome, and we'd like to listen.
I was born and raised in the Texas Hill Country in a small farm town, and back then, during the 70s and 80s, we had three stoplights, one which was totally unnecessary. I grew up on a 10-acre chunk of property surrounded by many hundreds of acres of undeveloped land. I moved to Corpus when I was 12, but moved back to the family house when I was 21 with several of my childhood friends. This would have been around 1993 or 1994. Anyways, on the back part of the land, we had a big bonfire circle where we would go and hang out and drink too much beer and burn cedar for entertainment. One night, myself, J, A, and A, some of my childhood friends, were out there hanging out, but it was kind of a quiet night. Just a few other folks there. So we decided to call it an early evening and started to walk back to the house, leaving the others to shut down the fire. Now on this night, we had a few Millers, not too many, and hadn't partaken of any smoke. We were just walking through this scrub and all of us saw what looked like city lights seen from afar. You know, like how you'll see a line of different lights at ground level. The thing is, I'd been roaming these woods since I was a kid, and I know where the few houses are. Plus, the terrain was actually hilly, which wouldn't allow you to see too far, a few acres at most. We all watched these lights for a few minutes, going, "What is that?" Just a line of lights at the ground level, rows of orange and yellow. It didn't seem to move or anything, but they did kind of flicker. Now, that might have been just branches moving, causing the flicker, but that's what it looked like. It's hard to say how big the line was. There was nothing to give it perspective in the night. It was about a 5-inch stretch, but was that seen from 20 yards or 200 yards or 2 acres? You get the idea. We went out the next day and hiked the land. We couldn't find anything to explain it. We never saw anything like that again in all the years we lived there. Now, the side note, this ranch next to our property is owned by a niece of Whitley Strieber, and her son was a regular hanger-outer at our place. Apparently, back in the olden days, like the late 1800s, her family had traded medical services with the local native tribes in exchange for land. Make of that what you will. There you go. Hope you enjoy Judah. So, a strange set of lights. Do you think, because it was Whitley Strieber's niece or something, there was a UFO landing in that field?
You know, we always hear about the fact that it could follow bloodlines and family lineage.
That's what I'm saying.
So maybe.
I don't know.
If you've never seen it before or since and know that that didn't belong there.
Yeah, out in the middle of
that's nowhere. The only thing you can safely assume that it was. Knowing what we know now, of course, that's the only thing you could safely assume that it was.
Crazy nonetheless.
I would be interested if you have any missing time. If you've ever had missing time while being in that area, any of you in that whole thing that saw it, have had any missing time or any just small little unexplained things because of what you've seen. Maybe they came back looking for others.
Yeah, maybe.
That's crazy. What would you do?
If I saw strange lights like that?
Yeah.
Nothing really besides be like, oh my God, what is that?
Right. Like, I don't know how I would react.
What could you do?
Yeah.
I mean, one second I'd like to approach to see what it is. And another part of me is like, no way, don't approach. Because then they're going to grab you.
Yeah. Part of here's the sad thing, is I think I would be frightened. I think the first time if I saw something like that, right, like let's say a craft landed, I honestly believe that I would act and like I would not want to interact because I'm afraid too many of these stories would come flooding back.
That's me.
And I might miss out on something great or I might live to see another day. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, like the guys at the Rendlesham Forest incident who were actually rubbing the UFO, like they were physically touching it. They could read and see symbols and pictographs on the side. Like, I don't think I would approach. I'm with you. I think I'd go the other direction.
I'm afraid that that's how I would act, that I wouldn't seize the opportunity because I wouldn't want to be seized myself.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. So look, speaking of wild stories and UFOs, I want to read you this. Because we had just talked about it the other day about, cattle mutilations and different of that sort, other mutilations of that sort. And I found this story, and I think y'all are going to enjoy it. It's like nothing that I have ever heard or have read anywhere before dealing with this. In May of 1973, four women, Judy Doherty, her daughter Cindy, Judy's mother and sister-in-law, had the most horrifying experience of their lives. After a long session of bingo in Houston, the four women were returning to Judy's hometown of Texas City, but first going by Alta Loma to drop off Judy's sister and brother-in-law. After dropping off the two in Alta Loma, the remaining four saw a strange light, which hovered above. The sight was intriguing enough that the four women stopped, got out of their car to get a clearer look at the source of the light. They then watched in awe until the light disappeared, and then resumed their trip onward to Texas City. Over time, Judy began to suffer from intense headaches and anxiety. After being seen and dismissed by several doctors, she was referred to a well-known ufologist and hypnotist, Dr. Leo Sprinkle. Dr. Sprinkle's previous experience with the UFO enigma led him to recommend hypnosis as a way to relieve Judy of her emotional trauma. Dr. Sprinkle most likely suspected an abduction from the beginning, but under hypnosis, Judy described an abduction scenario and was taken aboard a supposed spacecraft. Judy goes on to describe how a cow was taken up into the craft and methodically mutilated by two small entities. And during the hypnotic regression, Judy described the unusual sensation of being in two places at once. She said that she was still standing beside her car after they stopped to watch the strange light in the sky. However, she also stated that at the same time, she was in a strange chamber watching this gruesome experiment unfold before her eyes. Now, I'm going to read this to you. This is some of the session written out here from Dr. Sprinkle's stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he asked her, is there anyone around you? Says there was a long, almost 45-second pause, and she responded, yes, two little men. Says the two beings were about 3.5 to 4 foot tall, gray creatures with large egg-shaped heads. Says it's like a spotlight shining down on the back of my car, and it's like it has substance to it. Now, I've never heard that until she said it, and it's wild. The light felt like it had substance to it.
Right.
So it's a beam of some sort of energy, right, that you can physically, not just the warmth of a light on the skin, but substance to this beam.
You can feel the difference between the air and the night and this light, right?
Yeah.
Somehow its viscosity is different.
That's weird. And it says here, she says, I can see an animal being taken up in this. I can see it squirming and trying to get free. And it's like it's being sucked up. She goes on to mention that her daughter, Cindy, was on an operating table. She says, they don't listen. They just ignore me. They go on about their work as if it's nothing. They don't seem to have any emotions. They don't seem to care. They just seem to take samples from her. And it goes on to say it would be a number of years later when Judy's daughter, Cindy, also would go back and do her regressive hypnosis. And everything that she talked about was corroborated in her mother. So, I mean, it's one of those deals that I'm sure you could probably have told some BS or whatnot and maybe got her to believe it. But this is what she says. This was from February 1st of 2003. Judy Daugherty released this. First, I must say that there is no doubt that abductions exist. My abduction took place in 1973. There were 16 eyewitnesses to the craft, though not all remember an abduction. My daughter, who was 14 at the time, and myself, this was the first reported to Ellington Air Force Base in Texas, who denied anything was on the radar at the time. Our abduction was also returning from a bingo game in Houston to our home in Texas City, first going by Alta Loma to drop off sister and brother-in-law. There was another sighting of three people coming from a bingo game in Houston that got burned by the effects of the sighting. Our sighting was almost a year before theirs. So much happened that night, I would not attempt to go in detail. We were all changed and have never been the same since. We were the first, we were ridiculed so much by others who were not present, mostly family, that I did not talk about this for years. Then my husband returned home from Vietnam, and we were stationed in Yuma, Arizona. And somehow I heard about the APRO. I called them and told them about my sighting, and the very next day, a Mr. Daugherty and his wife and a doctor who had experience in hypnosis named Rose Tennant came to my house and spent the entire day going over what happened. Dr. Tennant regressed me, and a few details came out, or shall I say surfaced. I have been having terrible migraines, and just the amount of surfacing relieved much. I know I remembered a formula that was given to me by the small gray alien. I think that it was what caused a lot of the problems. I did not say anything to anyone else as I was still gun-shy and afraid of ridicule. A few years later, I got a call from a lady named Linda Howe. We talked a long time, her trying to convince me I needed to be regressed again for a TV documentary she was doing called The Strange Harvest. For some reason, I began to trust her, and she convinced me and believed what I was saying. And as all abductees know, this is one of the most important things to help one get on with their life. In my abduction, I witnessed a small calf being transported into a large craft. At that time, I was somehow teleported or astro-projected or something. As I was in the craft seeing what was going on, as well as standing by my car, and I had gotten out to see what this huge light was, and that had been pacing our car for about 20 miles or so. Anyway, I allowed Dr. Leo Sprinkle from the University of Wyoming to do the regression. It was about a three-hour regression. I fulfilled Miss Howe's agenda. She got an Emmy for her documentary. But I was left with all the information in my head that still needed siphoning. I asked her to help me write a book to be able to tell the amazing things that I was told and shown, and she agreed and then kept putting it off. Both her and Dr. Sprinkle used my case for their own agenda and had little else to say to me. I guess I'm trying to warn all of you to be careful who you trust. My main concern was I always wanted my abduction case to be presented in a way that it would not be construed as a crazy woman venting her boredom. So I again pulled myself in a shell and talked to no one. I was contacted by sightings to do a follow-up, and I called Linda Howe, and she told me it would make the story unbelievable to the average person and that I should not do it, so I turned them down. And later I learned that she had a rift with Mr. Winkler, and that was really the only reason she didn't want me to do the show. Since then, about 10 years ago, I was told by someone in the UFO community who was familiar with my case, Miss Howe had gone to Kirkland Air Force Base and was warned to keep me quiet, but that she had never told this to me. She told a ufologist who called me. So in other words, the government did not want me to say anything about a formula that I was given. I became frightened, and this is the first time I have shared anything. I hope someone reads this that will contact me and give me help or advice, as the abduction is now 30 years old. I am 63, and before I die, I would love to know what many already know and why they do not want my story told. Thanks for listening, Judy. And that was from February 1st of 2003.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of things I'd like to talk about when it comes to this particular story. Number one, the Air Force denied that there was anything in the airspace. Is that true? Or were they aware of it? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, all these abductions that are going on. Mm-hmm. Is the military aware of it? And they know there's nothing they can do. So they pretend to be dumb, like, no, there's nothing going on. When really they're like, yeah, we see it, but there's no reason to scramble jets. There's nothing we can do. So
that's a great point. Or it doesn't pick up on their on our radar.
Right.
Like, so they could easily turn it off, and, you know, because we know that they can just go and vanish off of our radar.
Right. So the Air Force denies that there was anything in the airspace. Is that true?
Well, maybe when they're riding dirty is when they turn on their cloaking device, right?
Maybe.
And that's when they slide down and grab people, is when they're cloaked.
Well, and then
But you're right. Not to cut you off, but you're right. What would we be able to do about it?
Right. So
what
I think,
could we do? Scramble jets them, try to make them stop? Well,
with the recent release of a lot of the videos, it seems like the government's acknowledging that they're aware of it,
mm-hmm.
that there's nothing they can do. Another thing I'd like to talk about the story is the Grays. They seemed emotionless, she said. Like when she was screaming,
yeah.
They didn't seem to care. There are theories out there that the Grays aren't actual aliens.
Oh,
They're like robots. That's like their AI.
They're just drones doing
the work.
That's
why it seems unfazed by you screaming, because it's not a living, it's not biological.
Yeah.
It's like a robot doing it for them. That this, they may send them from who knows where. The whole craft is a drone. With the robots in, like, the aliens aren't anywhere around here. So if something goes down, they're back on their home planet or wherever.
And we think about it as like that, as it being a robot, but it might be a fully physical flesh and blood creature that was just genetically grown for this exact reason.
Yeah, possibly. Also, the cattle mutilations.
That's the thing that gets me.
Why are they always with the cattle mutes? I don't get it. Well, here's my theory. My theory is, they just really like steak. They like meat.
Well, yeah. Maybe they're trying to figure out how to grow their best cow.
Why they've do? Already abducted and mutilated and sampled everything on this planet over the millions of years. And
so they know
like,
what tastes good?
They like cows the best. Not only do they like cows, they don't eat the meat. What do they always say is removed? The genitals.
The genitals are taken off, the lips, the
tongue.
Well,
they like Rocky Mountain oysters. They always say that the cow's tongue is removed. They like tongue. Yep. I like tongue. Yep. The organs. Liver,
yeah, but
heart.
You don't like ribeye?
I do, but they don't. They don't. Like Rocky Mountain oysters. They like tongue. They like liver and onions. They like heart. And
here
that's
we go.
It. They fly around.
Eyeballs. They like eyeballs.
Right. Some people like them. Say it tastes like dough.
Well, what I think about is in 1973 in Texas City, how many women do you think were up to snuff on their ufology lore enough to go, I saw a cattle mutilation?
Well, Texas City does have a Buc-ee's.
That's true.
I've stopped that at many
times. But not
times.
1973.
No, unfortunately.
But you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
It's like, it's almost like a telltale thing of like, how would you think to even throw that in 1973?
And why isn't her story more popular? That's, you know, she's even seems mystified why no one wants her story out there. In the lore of the UFO world, there's lots of stories people are aware of. I've never heard of this one.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Took place in my state.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a few years just, before I was
it's
born.
It's odd, man. It's a very, it's a thing that the same for is like, I don't know that you'll ever get information as to why. Knowing now and knowing how long ago this was written, I'm not surprised that it was suppressed, because now it probably wouldn't be because of what we know. We know now the government stands behind the fact that UFOs are real and still nobody cares.
Right.
Everybody's like, yep, on to the next story. So that it may have been a big thing to keep hush-hush back then, but right now it's just not big news.
Right. Well, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about a legend known as the Blue Man of Spring Creek. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Holla.
I got a pretty cool story that takes place, I can't talk, takes place in the Ozark Mountains.
Is there a gas leak, monoxide in here, Willie?
Yeah, right. Anyways, this takes place in the Ozark Mountains, and it comes from an article that was published in the Quarterly Ridge Runner magazine in the spring of 1895. And it talks about this legend of the Blue Man. And I like this story because It could be like a Sasquatch. It could be like a devolved human. It could be a wild man. Like it checks all the boxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So check this out. It says, if you've ever been walking out in the woods in Ozark country and thought you saw a big hairy monster, you may have. Don't laugh. Many people have seen the blue man. Other parts of the world have their own real or maybe mythical monsters. Scotland has Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster, and the Yeti or the Abominable Snowman from Tibet. The United States has a few creatures of its own. From the western states come Bigfoot legends, the Iceman from Minnesota, and the Headless Horseman, as told of by Washington Irving. Ozarkers have never been ones to be outdone by others, and here in the Ozarks, we have the Blue Man of Spring Creek. Now, the story began over 100 years ago in the winter of 1865 when a hunter from Douglas County named Saul Collins was hunting on the ridge between Big North Fork and Spring Creek. With snow on the ground, Collins was tracking game when he came upon a set of tracks that were something like a bear's, but different. Now, Saul had killed many bears, but these tracks were the largest and wildest he said he ever saw. So he started following the tracks, and he kept on them, and he followed the footprints north, almost to Indian Creek, then in a wide half circle to the west until he was close above the Big North Fork River. While climbing the north slope of Upper Twin Mountain, Collins looked up and barely escaped being hit by a boulder that tumbled right by him. He again barely escaped two more huge boulders that came crashing down the hill. Just as he seemed to get out of the way and get behind a big post oak, that's when he first saw the gigantic figure shaped like a huge man, which was naked except for what looked like the skin of an animal around its midsection and another wrapping around its feet. The creature was completely covered with a coat of curly, short, black hair. When the sun struck it, it took on a deep, dark blue hue. Collins never gave up his claim that this creature was not less than 9 feet tall, and this is among the shortest estimates of many others for the next few years to come. Saul stated that he only stared long enough to see the creature throw away a 10-foot club he was carrying and pick up another boulder.
Dang.
Which he threw against the post oak. Then the giant made an ear-splitting scream that some said was more terrifying than anything that ever came from another beast similar in those hills. Collins then headed back and gathered up some of his neighbors, and for a few days they kept on the trail of the beast the best they could by following its tracks in the snow. A few times they caught a glimpse of it at a distance, plundering through the woods at a rate that left the posse far behind. No man was ever able to get within distance to take a shot at this creature, but nevertheless, the hunt continued for 2 to 3 weeks, almost every day. But there was never any result. Many people saw the wild man, and people in isolated cabins claimed to be awakened in the middle of the night by the screams of this creature. Usually after the awful shrieks were heard, the person would find a lamb or a pig that had been carried away. Now, by now, the Blue Man, as he was now called, had been considered a fake, and it was almost 9 years before he was heard from again. In the autumn of 1874, word passed that he had emerged once again. Because there were several sheep and hogs that started disappearing and the carcasses were found in the woods. Organized hunts were carried out to capture this creature, but after a week or two, the Blue Man disappeared once again. 16 years went by, and he only made 2 or 3 visits to the hills along the Big North Fork. Every visit he also made a clean getaway from the hills of men. However, the last time they got too close, for he remained out of sight from 1890 all the way to 1911, and nothing was seen or heard of him For this reason, many of the people who had moved into the area regarded the stories of the Blue Man of Spring Creek as a figment of someone's imagination. They didn't believe the stories. About this time, he was seen again, and more joined in the search. Reportedly, they discovered the creature's den in a cave in a remote valley. The floor of this cave was littered with the bones of animals he had eaten, and a bed of dry leaves was found in the corner. Again, just as before, the creature disappeared. The next time the Blue Man was seen, O.C. Collins was searching for two lambs that had disappeared. He spotted the creature on Spring Creek, 4 miles from Old Horton. 2 days later, Cap Turner came across him catching fish with his hands in Indian Creek. The creature chased Turner up a steep hillside, swinging a huge club. Cal Alsup, a few days later, was one of the posse members that chased the Blue Man into a cave. He stumbled through the darkness over objects he knew were the pelts of sheep or the dried hides that had once made a meal for this wild man. He was seen one more time after eluding his pursuers at this cave. That time was at Ava Crossing, where he was catching crayfish from under rocks and eating the tails. By November 15th, 1924, terror was prevailing over northern Howell and Douglas counties. From Tater Hill to Collins Ford and from Blue Buck to the Ava Crossing, people were searching for this Blue Man. Cattle weren't allowed to graze, sheep were watched by herders with rifles, and livestock was locked up each night. Nobody left their home, and churches and schools were closed. People armed with rifles and shotguns searched every nook and cranny of the county in search for this Blue Man of Spring Creek. In December 1938 was the next account of the Blue Man came. The Bunt brothers, who were living in Johnson Hollow, said their coon dogs had bayed off from them quite a little distance. The men had been seeing wild hogs in the area, which they often do, so they didn't go to their cabin for their guns. They just went to the ridge to call off the dogs before they killed one of the hogs. They got quite a surprise when they saw the dog baying up the big tree in which there was a man hissing and snarling at them in anger. He had no weapons and no clothes, except for some type of fur garment around the middle and something wrapped around his feet. According to the brothers, he was hairy and apparently blue from the cold. The younger brother took the dogs a good way off while the older tried to talk to the man in the tree. Bunt promised him food, shoes, clothing, and a place to sleep, but the man in the tree just stared at him. After about half an hour, Bunt gave up and joined his younger brother. They said they were hesitant to walk away and leave the man there, but they had no reason to question him any further. Later, they were questioned as to why they didn't report this to the law, and they said they had no complaint against the man. He had no way to come, there was nowhere to go, and they didn't want to go all the way into town, which was 8 miles away. Only once was a wild man caught, but it happened before the Bunt brothers had their conversation with the Blue Man. It happened in August 18, 1911, edition of the Sentinel, which published a Pomona ran this story entitled "The Wild Man Captured." Now check this out. It says the mysterious disappearance of livestock and a farm truck that had many farmers along Bryant Creek puzzled was solved. Two boys, Ott Collin and Tom Rayburn, were returning from a fishing trip. They noticed something apparently spring right out of the ground near the base of the hollow. They began chasing one of the frightened sheep that was out there grazing. The frightened boys didn't stick around. They ran home just as quick as they could, and they went home and they told their parents what they had just seen. They quickly gathered a bunch of men. The boys acted as guides, and when arriving at the spot, they found a log and an opening into the ground that looked like it was frequently used. One of the men pulled together his courage, shoved a lantern, and followed into the cave room of a considerable size. The article says that at the far side, a man was crouched and said to be the sorriest specimen of a man any of them have ever seen.
I was just doing my best.
Right? He was bare of clothing, except for a breech cloth of some kind of animal hide. His body was completely covered in short hair, and his head was covered with a mass of hair 2 feet long. The wild man tried to get away, but was caught and turned over to the authorities. He either couldn't or wouldn't talk, and his cave was littered deep with wool, hair, bones, and feathers. There was no evidence of him ever having cooked any of this food. It says the most recent account of an encounter with a wild man occurred in 1966 in Peter Bottom, a fertile meadow along the War Eagle River near War Eagle Community in northwest Arkansas. It began when a doctor who was wanted for murder found refuge in the forest around Peter Bottom. When the man was caught, he was ruled insane and sent to a state mental institution. Just before he died in the early 1960s, he made the statement that he was near dying and he wanted to tell the story of a monster that lived in Peter Bottom. He also made the statement to stay away from that area, and the story appeared on the back pages of local newspapers. It says because of his history of mental disorder, it was treated as if a figment of his imagination. So little interest was stirred in the War Eagle area until 1966. On a Sunday afternoon, two men were horseback riding down the steep road that leads to Peter Bottom. Suddenly, a tractor coming at full speed from the bottom almost ran them off the road. The man on the tractor warned the two there that there was something horrible living down there. He had been starting his spring plowing when he spotted the monster. The boys thanked him for his warning, but decided they wouldn't believe it unless they saw it for themselves. So they kept riding, but the horses became restless and soon refused to go any further. The boys then walked the rest of the way into the valley where they spotted what they thought was a large clump of white fur in the grass near a cedar tree. They thought it must be a dead horse or a cow, but when they got within 10 yards of the clump of fur, it stood up. The two young men described it as an animal that stood upright like a man, with its body being covered completely with white hair about 2 or 3 inches long. They said its height was about 8 or 9 feet, and his features looked more like a man's than an ape's. Its face and hands were pinkish in color, and these were the only areas not covered by the white fur. They also said there was a strong, offensive odor, which they described as smelling like old coffee grounds, coming from the creature. The two stood there, unable to believe what they were seeing. Then the creature began slowly walking towards them, making strange sounds, and they turned and ran up the hill as fast as they could. When they got to their horses, they put quick distance between them and the Peter Bottom. The parents of one young man said by the time he reached his home in the Knob Hill community, he was almost in a state of shock. He then spent several days in the hospital with a nervous disorder. As the young men's tale spread, hunting parties were formed, but the strange creature was never seen again. And over the years, cattle have been found torn apart, and one man's corpse was found with his limbs ripped from his body. No one can prove that the two really saw the creature, but Peter Bottom hasn't been farmed since then. It can be said that the albino monster in Peter Bottom is clearly unique in its own right. How then can the legend of the Blue Man of Spring Creek and the monster in Peter Bottom be explained? This has come to be the most widely accepted reasoning. A man by the name of Jerry Hilterbrand, who settled in what is now Douglas County in 1820 and died there in 1885, told the following story handed down to him by the older residents of that area. It says, years before the American Revolution, when Missouri was still a part of the French colony of Louisiana, a French fur trader came through the Ozarks with a beautiful Spanish woman. After a while, he got tired of his companion and traded her to an Indian chief for a large amount of furs, leaving her captive. The woman, left with the Indians in the wilderness, lost her reasoning, and lived for years a demented creature of the hills. From her came a race of people, half Spanish and half Indian, who never mingled with anyone and hid away in a remote and inaccessible places. They are increased in numbers and were known to exist for a good many of years, between 1820 and 1840, when the pioneering settlers came into the Ozarks, the race probably disappeared, and many thought it was probably retreated to more remote Boston Mountains in western Arkansas. Now, that's what this newspaper claims. I mean, so is it a feral person that they're seeing? Is it, I mean, it sounds more like a feral person than it does a Sasquatch to me. But the way they describe it is, that, I mean, it's the typical caveman. A fur, nothing on it but like shoes, crude fur, hair covering its body, holding a club. You know, it sounds like a modern day caveman. But, you know, in the 1800s, I can believe that it could be a person that's living on their own, and they're not living in a cabin, but they're like, maybe they have a mental disorder and they literally are stealing livestock to live off of. I mean, heck, in the 1800s, I mean, people still were living very wild-like.
Well, and I also think, too, like, we don't really know just how feral this person was. It was whoever told the story was correct, how feral correct. This person was. This person could be an outlaw, could have been somebody on the run, maybe somebody committed murder accidentally, right? And mm-hmm. so they're on the run, they're hiding out there, and then, like you said, one thing leads to another, and it could lead to this. It does sound like more of a feral person. The whole time you're telling it, I think of, like, The Last of the Dog Men, or I think of, like, Ishii. And you start to find out the true story of Ishii, and I've always talked about doing it. Maybe I need to cover that. It's a really interesting story about the last wild Native American. But, man, I don't know. It does sound like it could have been a spinoff of a tribe like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think that there's – I like the stories of the wild men. And like, even in some of David Pilatus's books, some of the sightings there in like that part of the country, people are described – it's not as Sasquatch, but several of the sightings are described as a wild person.
You know what else I find interesting about these wild man sightings is you never see a bald one. If you're a wild man, that's why you'll never be wild. I'll never be wild. Why? Because we don't have hair. If you're a wild man, you have to have like the most beautiful head of hair. It's got to be long. You know, I not me.
Well, and see, in some of the stories.
I'm a troll. I'm built like that.
Some of the stories described as giant, like 9 foot tall, which fits the typical story. But then some of the other sightings, it looked like somebody was the poorest shape they've ever seen a human being in. Like they look starved, malnourished. Short, like barely getting by, like Gollum-like.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends. I think the same thing with a lot of the Sasquatch sightings. In the back of your mind, you've been conditioned to think Bigfoot's giant.
Yeah.
So when you naturally, and it's taken out of context or you don't have anything in comparison, you think it's bigger than it is. In reality, it's not. I mean, how many times have you been glassing?
Well, some of them may be.
Some may
you
be.
You know, we don't know. Yeah.
How many times have you been glassing? You see like a goat or something. And it looks huge. And when you get up to it, man, those things are tiny.
Yeah.
So I always wonder, because everybody knows that Bigfoot's a giant, so you're kind of preconditioned.
Yeah, kind of so.
To assume that. But that's crazy. I love the wild stories of wild feral people living in the Ozarks. What a cool story.
Do you think I still feel like it's possible today. Like, I still feel like it could be a thing that could happen today.
Like I always say, I hope it is, because it's kind of cool. It's neat to have the mystery, right? Once the mystery is solved, it's not as fun.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
There's got to be a few feral people living in, you know, the tundra of...
And I don't even mean... I'm just talking about here in the States.
Oh, just here
in the
States.
Like, we know about the hobbits, and people find, like, what look like very primitive dwellings built out in the middle of national forest lands. Like, you know, we know people personally that have been 15 miles back off in the backcountry and come across what looks like hand-built shelters that's not maybe necessarily Bigfoot as it is its people. And you can tell that they've been occupied for quite some time. So it always makes me wonder, has that been somebody on the run? You know, like, where could you go? Because that's not an undertaking that you would just want to jump out in the middle of. Like, as romantic as it seems on television and on Instagram and on YouTube, is, oh, it's easy bushcraft and all that. Try it.
Yeah.
Try it. Not go to a national park with nothing but what's in your pockets and just give it a whirl. Here's one even easier for you. Just go outside and lay down in your backyard and take a nap.
Right.
Spend the night with nothing. Don't start a fire. Don't do anything. In fact, get up that morning and don't even eat. Go all day and all night and all the next day, fast. Go through, let that be, because it's not fun after a while.
No.
But it sure does make you love warm water,
man,
and a soft bed. So it's worth doing. I urge everyone, push yourself just a little bit because it makes you love everything that you got.
Right. Well, let's take a break, folks. Yeah. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Perspectives.
Spit it out.
Yeah, man.
Was that too many P's in there for you?
When you yelled, Ric Flair, I got scared. Right. I got nervous. I thought he was in here.
Oh, man, I have seen, that's a good documentary, the Ric Flair one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And Andre the Giant, man, I love that documentary too. That's old school, like as a kid.
Have you seen the one on HBO with Andre?
Yes.
Yeah, very good.
It's
very
a great
good.
One.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't realize as a kid, of course, you don't know, he's just Andre. You didn't realize how miserable that guy was. It makes sense as you get older, like physically that dude hurt all the time, living in a world that wasn't made for him.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Man,
I remember seeing him as a kid.
Yes.
My uncle would take me to the huge wrestling things. I remember Kamala and, you know, what were some of the other guys? George the Animal Steel. And
I remember seeing the old ones.
And I saw Andre.
Here in Fort Worth, where you could see Kabuki and all the Von Erichs.
Yeah.
And what was it? Terry Funk. Who else was there? Was it the Freebirds? I ended up meeting Mick Foley here in Weatherford when he was Cactus Jack Manson, when he was like in his mid-20s.
You met him here in Weatherford?
Yeah, he wrestled at the Armory.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my dad, after I remember the posse, it had to supply all the chairs to the Armory, so we got free tickets. So I got to go to the front row when I was like 11, 10 or 11, and watch it. And, of course, that's in the heyday of my wrestling love, right?
Oh, yeah.
So like 10 to 12 or 13, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, watching it all go down. It was great.
That's hilarious.
Guys are heck of athletes.
Yeah, well, Mick Foley, he kind of looks like a wild man, right?
Yeah, he's a good dude. You watch some interviews, like recent interviews with him. He's still all put together, which is amazing.
Don't those guys get terrible CTE and stuff, though?
Like, you would think. Some
I
mean, do.
I know that because breaking those tables and chairs over your head all the time, that's got to be bad for
you.
You
need to watch the document where he talks about the Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
Like with him and The Undertaker, right? Craziness. It's craziness. Mm. My hat's off to them. I don't watch it anymore. I just not into it. But those guys are the ladies too. They're unbelievable athletes.
Oh, I know. I don't watch it either. But
and
I
to
mean,
do that night after night, and, psh, I was no say, thanks,
their schedule's
man.
Ridiculous.
No,
they're on
thank
the road
you.
All the time.
Yeah,
they're touring, and I mean, it just
we don't think about that. You're like, you know, it's entertainment. You forget about it. You're like, that's a grind. Grind. My hat's off to all of them in that grind. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So other than trying to stay warm. What you got popping off? I know we got some D&D coming up.
Yeah, we got some of that. We got another Glimmer Man sighting.
Oh. Were you going to hang on? I've got a crazy sighting I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
You want to drop the Glimmer Man on me? Or you want to? Let me drop this on you because I want to get you. So, because, you know, I was up there in Kansas, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is near New Cambria, Kansas. This is back in 1975. Good year was 75. It says a young teenage couple was driving through the country, and right after crossing a cement bridge that spanned a river, they pulled into a farmer's access road and parked at the edge of the field, alongside a bend there in the river, with the car pointing east. Now soon, the pair noticed a strange light that suddenly approached their location in a kind of blur, or is what they called warp speed. So mind you, this is 7 o'clock in the evening. It says suddenly a hovering treetop level dark object that was rectangular in shape appeared with one red light and one green light, and it ran positioned together on the lower part of the craft near its center. They stared in amazement, and after about 5 minutes, says they noticed the craft's position had moved to the right, okay, and it seemed to move in a very slow motion to the other side of the river. As Kyle's saying, slow motion for me. Slow. That's what it's moving in. It says, after about 5 minutes, the witnesses decided, of course, they're done, right? Let's get out of here. They turned onto the county road and subsequently onto the cement bridge, and they saw that the craft had returned to its original position, above them and slightly back from the bridge. They stopped their vehicle and got out again to look. They said the craft was about 20-25 foot wide, and this time they saw a large rectangular glass window, or what appeared to be glass, running across the middle third of its front. and standing inside to the left side, looking down at the witnesses, were two beings, which the witnesses could see only from the waist up, but could tell that they were about 4 foot tall, with abnormally large upper heads and large black eyes. They seemed, this says the eyes here, devoid of emotion, and under their skin, get a load of this, was pure white, like the moon, the texture resembling that of an albino salamander. Their eyes ran almost north-south with their heads. The craft hovered silently the whole time, and after about a minute of eye contact with the humanoids, the witnesses re-entered their vehicles and rapidly drove away from the area. They could still see the craft hovering where they had left it. My question, and that's where they leaved it, okay?
Yeah.
My question, first of all, I love the idea of salamander people.
I don't.
We love the lizard people, the slimy, slick salamander, white albino, where you can see their insides moving.
Right.
And so, yeah, that idea is awesome. What I don't like is the fact that they said, oh, we watched, stared at them eye to eye for a few minutes and got in the car and drove away. I bet you didn't. I bet you think you did, but I bet you didn't.
Right.
You may have stood there staring eye to eye for a few minutes in your mind. You spent about 4 or 5 hours on that ship. They dropped you back off and watched you drive away.
Right.
I'd go get regressed. Of course, this is no, from 75. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to get regressed because I wouldn't want to know. I'd be like, they wiped my brain for a reason.
Right.
Can you wipe it again so I'm not even thinking about this?
Yeah, right. So what you're saying is you don't mind it going down. You just don't want to know about it.
Oh, no. I mind it going down, I also don't want to know about it.
If it does happen, you don't want to know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want anything to do with being an abductee.
It does. You know where it sticks out for me for when I think about that is we always discuss it even off air and knowing that it didn't go down that way. It has nothing to do with the impact. It's the fact of the movie Fire in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
When I see and that light hits him and he just, that stuff freaks me out to no end.
Especially when all the witnesses.
Yeah. And they, you just freeze and you're like, oh. What would you do? Like, if I saw you, like you talked about the military didn't scramble jets. If I saw you getting abducted, the best I could do would be like, well, at least I can bear witness because I don't even, what am I do next?
Right. I mean, and you know, no one's ever come forward and said, oh, Travis was a liar. Like
no.
All to this day. Like, yeah, we saw it. So how could it not be true?
How could the majority? Yeah. Oh, exactly. It makes you reevaluate every. And then knowing what we know now again and what people have fessed up to is, yeah, of course, there's going to be BS, but.
Right. Yeah. So as I promised, this may be extraterrestrial. I don't know.
Oh, lay it on me.
But this is about a witness and his friend who were exploring an abandoned Brookfield Air Force Base in Ohio when they encountered an unknown beeping sound and, get this, an aggressive Glimmer Man entity.
First of all, the beeping sound is never good.
That's the UFO backing up.
That's right.
It says the witness, Joseph, claims that sometime in November 2002, he and a friend decided to head to the abandoned Brookfield Air Force Station located near Brookfield, Ohio. It had been abandoned since around 1986 after previously being a nursing home. There were about 30 empty buildings on 10 acres of land, surrounded by overgrown vegetation and some barbed wire fence. Police regularly patrolled the area to keep out vandals, though many of the locals, like Joseph, spent much of their youth roaming around the old base. You could imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
Be a cool place to explore.
How fun would it be to sneak around there as a kid?
Right. Joseph believes he had been there probably more than 100 times. As an adult, Joseph still liked to go up in the area occasionally and shoot guns and hike and do all the fun stuff. The base was about a tenth of a mile from his home if you were walking through the woods. There was a hole cut in a fence which allowed easy access to the property. On that chilly November 2002 day, Joseph and his old friend, Tori, decided to head to the base to do some shooting. Only Joseph was armed. There was light snow on the ground, and as they made their way through the woods, following a deer path to the wire fence, Joseph noticed that it was unusually quiet that day. Walking in the woods, no sounds of animals, no wind, no nothing. At the time, he didn't think much of it, but looking back, he believes that it was strange enough that he remembers it. After finding and crawling through the hole, they eventually made their way onto the base, walking through knee-deep grass. as they walked towards the buildings, they began to hear beeping sounds, which they found to be odd given that the buildings hadn't been powered since the late 1980s. As they got within 5 feet of the building, the beeps increased and became louder. They eventually made their way through an open garage bay door, and this is when the beeping went crazy. He says, think a metal detector zeroing in on metal. My friend Tori became frightened. Joseph noticed that there were two doors leading into rooms, one of which was closed. He found this odd because every other time he had come up there, the doors were always open. The beeping was coming from the room with the closed door. So, despite Tori's misgivings, Joseph kicked open the door and entered. The beep slowly faded out, replaced by a loud droning sound. He noticed a device sitting on the floor about 3 feet away. Initially, he thought it was a pipe bomb. He thought he was going to die. It looked like an air compressor with wires on the left side going into a rectangular black box with a cylinder attached to it. He said, I have no idea what it was. Joseph recalled he wondered if the police or maybe the Marines who occasionally trained at the base had put it there. Tori was frightened and insisted that they need to leave. Joseph also shared that feeling. They decided to head back to the fence and get out of there. As they made their way through the tall grass, things got very quiet. They both stopped, sensing that they were being watched. All of a sudden, they could hear footsteps coming through the overgrown brush. That is when they noticed across the field that snow was bouncing up and the grass bushes were parting, as if something was going through the grass, something they couldn't see. Joseph said it was the weirdest thing. Joseph could see the outline of what appeared to be a human, but it was transparent. He could see through it. He could see the brush on the other side of it, but it was distorted, like an optical illusion. Both men became frightened and headed for the fence. Joseph and Tori both kept an eye on it as they moved. They noticed that there were clear indications in the snow, and the brush and snow were moving as if somebody was trudging through the grass. But they couldn't see anything, nothing beyond the outline. Even stranger, Joseph claimed that it seemed to completely vanish occasionally and then would come back. It trailed them, but never got more than 30 feet away from them, except when they neared the fence. At some point, Joseph stopped and raised his rifle at the thing. This seemed to anger the entity. There was some brush that stood about 15 feet high, and it separated like somebody drove a truck through it. It was coming hard. Snow was flying. Brush was flying. Joseph aimed at it, but for the first time ever as a hunter, he felt a real sense of dread, like he shouldn't shoot at this thing. His friend Tori also urged him not to shoot, as it would only make things worse. They eventually found the hole, and by this time it was full sprinting at them. The two men rushed through the hole and into the woods, keeping their eyes on the semi-invisible entity. Joseph noticed that it stopped at the fence, like it almost wasn't allowed to leave. Then it was gone. He said it just vaporized. 3 weeks later, Joseph returned with another friend, and they spent hours searching through every abandoned building, and they never found that beeping device, nor did they ever encounter the entity again. Looking back, Joseph senses that the thing he encountered was something evil, and that it meant to do them harm. He likened his sighting to the Alien and the Predator films, but noted that while similar, it wasn't the same. So what did he see?
What was that? It had to be something there, not left, not... This is something that was looking for something else there.
What about the strange box? Like, did they have a time slip? What was going on?
What I was thinking about was this, and this may be totally off, but this is what I was thinking about. What if that Air Force base or what that old military base at one point in time had... something extraterrestrial there, like either against its will and it has shown up. They just so happened to be there when this thing has returned looking, or part of its people or whatever it was is there looking. And that box may be something that helping to locate what they were trying to find. And they instantly thought that maybe these people showing up had got it.
Right. Or maybe he was recovered.
Or he's just maybe running it off, running them off so they can recover something.
Maybe the Air Force did recover some kind of crashed craft and the thing got out.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, it's there's so many different ways to look at this. But what could it have been?
I don't know.
And there's nothing natural that could be. Right.
Right. And I mean, I've heard lots of people talk about it's the technology that we have. But
yeah,
most of the sightings, it doesn't sound like it's human. But I do want, I'm very interested in what the heck the Glimmer Man is.
Well, and it's like we talk about, what would be the point of having all that cool technology just to use it to scare kids and people that are nosy?
Yeah, right. Wouldn't make any sense.
Right. The way you have to look at stuff is completely changed. It's like, you don't need to have all the cool camo if you got drones.
Yeah, right.
Or you can invest in making, you know, microscopic video and microphones that you can fly like fly drones into meetings and land them like insects or something. You don't need any of that. Or it's explosive and it lands on the back of your head on your toupee or wherever it's at and blows up in your pocket.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's so many other things that we like. This just doesn't feel like it's ours.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's ours. If you have a Glimmer Man sighting of your own, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. If you have anything else you'd like to share with me and Kim, you can call the number 888-393-2783. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Word.
Let's not forget about our sponsors, Trade. To get $20 off your first three bags, go to drinktrade.com/expanded. Take their quiz to start your journey to the perfect cup. And HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/expanded16 and use the promo code expanded16 for up and get up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Remember, HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week? Oh, that's right. You're going to Colorado.
Oh, that's right. I am.
I forgot. I'm jealous. Yep. My brother got back from Colorado yesterday.
I know. I've been looking at all the photos. They're going where we're going.
Man, I wish I was going with you.
It's going to be a good time. Like I said, this is only the second trip my wife and I have ever made, you know, just like we've talked about, like spur of the moment, let's go do this. You know, we went to North Carolina, just us two. We've done it one other time when we went to Broken Bow, one time, just us. So this is the first, but it's the first time we've ever got to ski together, just her and I, since we were 18. So,
man, that's awesome.
Since all the times that we were going, because there was at one time, we went like 3 or 4 times within like 2 months.
Oh,
we
yeah.
were back
oh.
and forth to Red River like every 2 weeks.
When I was young, when I was in my 20s, I went all the time, all the time.
Yeah.
Multiple, I mean, the whole ski season.
Yeah. So that's, we're planning to go up there and just, you know, do all that. So we'll be gone about a week and I'll be back. So
awesome. I'll be doing a bunch of continuing education.
I know you love that.
It's my favorite part of the job.
This is the thing you look forward to the most.
Not only do I have to do it, I have to pay money to do it and miss out on money that I could be earning while I'm doing it.
True.
Right?
I love True. It. Yeah.
But you got to do it.
It
is what it is, right?
Yep.
All right, folks. We're gonna stay,
and looks like the week I'm going to be gone. The weather's going to be nice. So
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. We got more stuff coming. And like I said, we still have that surprise. We'll hopefully by the end of March, we can hopefully let it out of the bag.
Oh, I thought it was the beginning of March. Is it the end of March?
Well, that's whenever we find out more about it. But we won't know the finality probably till near the end of March.
I got you. Awesome. Well, I hope everybody out there has a good week. Stay safe, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.